around Palestine.
We're going to have to leave it there, Bill, but we're going to continue the discussion and post online at democracynow.org. Bill Fletcher, longtime trade unionist member of the nation's editorial board, and Jeff Shirky, labor historian, journalist. We'll link to all of your pieces. A very happy birthday to Narmeen Maria. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Rectangular, rapid flashing beacons are warning devices at pedestrian crossings. Maintaining safety at these crossings is the responsibility of both pedestrians and drivers. Be watchful when you see a pedestrian beacon and look for approaching pedestrians, even when the lights are dark. A pedestrian should push the button to activate the signal. When the lights begin flashing, indicate you intend to cross by carefully stepping into the crosswalk. The flashing lights are meant to catch a motorist's attention. When you see them, it means a pedestrian is trying to cross. Be prepared to yield to pedestrians in the crosswalk. Allow pedestrians to completely cross the road, whether or not the lights are still flashing. When pedestrians and motorists follow the rules of the road, everyone can stay safe.
Yes, do be careful out there. It's dark, it's winter, and there are a lot of people out there. It's also 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 and 107.3 megahertz, as well as over the internet to the entire world at WUSB.fm. Now, because it's Tuesday at 6 p.m., that means that the program schedule for this time is off the wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. Overall, I'd say. Do you know what this is?
This is Boxing Day.
That's true. You're right. It is Boxing Day. What are we supposed to do?
I
supposed to hit somebody full in the face? Is that what it is? Or
I think it has something to do with the boxes that packages come in. No, it's a Canadian thing. I don't know. Why are you asking? I'm just saying.
Well, you brought it up. You mentioned it.
You asked me what it is.
You tell me
what it is.
I was going to tell you what it is.
What is this?
I said, what it is. What this is.
This is the theme song?
No, this is our last show for 2023.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I wanted it to mean something special. But now it's ruined.
So that's where we are. Folks listening, how was your holiday? It was a fun time, I'm sure, for all. There's a lot of stuff to get back to in the six intervening days of the year.
All right, I'll do the show, but we're going to talk later.
No, this this is business.
Yeah,
this is hard.
No, you're right,
this
you're
is
right.
Hardcore.
You know,
community
today,
radio.
You know what today also
needs
is
right now.
This brings back memories from when I first started at WUSB, and our general manager Norm Preslin would tell us the importance of being at the station no matter what, and he would say December 26th, it's the loneliest day on campus. But you have to be there if you have a slot to fill. And that's, well, we're broadcasting remotely, so technically we're not. But, you know, we showed up virtually. We're here. It's 6:06 and 45 seconds right now. So that should prove that that's not good enough for you. Okay, it's foggy outside. It's foggy. It's dark. What more do you want, people? We're live. We're here right now. They don't believe me. Did anything happen in the news today?
Well,
I haven't been paying attention. So
where do you
want
to start? I don't know.
It's the day after Christmas. It's always going to be the day after Christmas on the 26th, so that doesn't prove anything. No, Congress isn't in session, so nothing stupid happened.
Yeah, I didn't follow any kind of activity there. Mm-hmm. I assume they're still away.
Israel bombed? No, that happens every day.
That's
well, you're just going to have to take our word for it.
Thing.
It's December 26th, last show of the year, so next year it will be 2024.
We don't have to prove it.
No, we don't
but we
have
will
to prove anything.
We'll commemorate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some new things that will be happening in 2024, at least here in New York. Let's see here. millions of New Yorkers will see a little bit more in their pay because minimum wage is going up to $16 an hour in most areas, including Long Island. So that's got to be good, right? Yeah. There's two other bills effective January 1st that will allow all voters to vote in elections by mail during the 9-day early voting period and allow cities to combat damage from overpopulation of deer. Wait, are these two things linked? Because they're not really related. Early voting and overpopulation of deer are two totally separate items. Just want to make that clear. I don't know about the deer thing. You know, I never have problems with deer. I really don't. People are always upset. You know, they say the problems that deer bring are that people hit them with their cars and people have their flowers eaten that they wish to grow in their front lawn. These are human problems. These aren't deer problems. You're the ones driving and hitting things without looking. You know, without being careful, and you're planting flowers that don't belong here in the first place. So yeah, of course the deer are gonna try to correct that. I don't know. Am I over sympathetic to deer?
Well, I think sprawl itself is something that puts people the urban wildland interface further out into spaces that weren't that way. And of course, there's unusual population things going on with all kinds of animals that are able to adapt to human food and, you know, byproducts of the environments humans are creating. And I don't know, there has to be, I guess, some kind of management. It is a very frequent topic. People really get into this.
Well, you know, every time someone brings this up to me, they say, you know, they're out of control. They're destroying the plants, the flowers, the trees. It's overcrowded. They're getting in the way. And I always say to them, and it's never met well, yeah, you know, I hear that problem. And there's this species known as humans that are the worst offenders. How shall we control them? And usually the answer isn't a controlled hunt of any sort. No, usually we're the ones that are supposed to just do whatever we want. And if some other species is becoming a little bit too prevalent, well, that's a problem. We have to do something about that. But it's a problem we caused in the first place because we cut down all the forest where they used to live, and now they're here because we didn't used to have deer in the area.
Well, imagine if deer had smartphones and were like documenting all the instances where humans were occurring in their environment and sharing it and talking about ways to mitigate the humans. There would, you know, we have all these people with sensors that are going out and being aware of all the wildlife that they're living amongst and acting surprised. And
wait, are you saying
silly.
maybe they have something beyond cell phones and they're keeping track of us that way, and we don't know what they're using yet because we haven't advanced to that stuff. I'm not going to sleep tonight now thinking about that.
We need people to imagine that possibility because you wouldn't want to start offending them.
You know, I try not to offend wildlife. I really, you know, I try to get along, and I think it pays off because, you know, we walk around various areas and we actually start recognizing swans in the area, and they recognize us. And instead of running away or turning their back, they just sort of stay around. Turkeys are the same, except they're more hostile and they will chase you. And I think it's awesome that they chase people and they chase cars and all that. And I say the more the merrier.
There have been there's a lot of waterfowl and birds and that kind of thing, and it's cool to be aware of species that have bounced back mm-hmm. that were otherwise endangered, and things like fox and other animals being around that their reemergence or numbers mm-hmm. have an effect on these other animals too, and there's even reports of bears in Connecticut and other species that are moving in ways that are unusual or that haven't been a part of the areas, and of course they're wow. experiencing sprawl as well, so they get yeah. the same kind of things like, oh gosh, there's bears all over, and it's sort of people that are there documenting it, and the migratory patterns and their interface with places where people are living becoming more prevalent. Uh-huh. And
is it bear or bears? What's the plural of bear?
Oh, I messed that up for sure.
No, but I know deer, the plural of deer is deer. I thought the plural of bear was bear.
It's bear.
I've seen the word bears many times. So you can get away with saying bears. Maybe when you're talking about a group of bears, maybe you can do it that way. But you can't say a group of deers. Boy, English is weird.
Yeah. The other thing, that wage increase, that's probably just going to account for like inflation and so, you know,
yeah,
people are just, that's going to like just basically break even and maybe allow people to make it to next year.
But I want to go back to the wildlife because yeah. Connecticut has bear and New Jersey has bear and we don't have bear here
yet.
On Long Island. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to it. All they have to do is swim across the Long Island Sound.
Or take the ferries.
Or we just smuggle a few, you know, cubs over.
Let nature
take its course.
Are people serious about the deer mitigation?
Well, how about coyotes? Coyotes, I understand, are on the way. I don't know why they're taking so long to get here. But when they get here, they can hunt, you know, if let nature take its course on that as well. You know, if you feel there are too many deer, it's not up to us to control everything. And it's, you know, it's pretty dangerous to just allow hunting in suburban areas in the first place. If we're going to be concerned about, you know, having all these animals around, well, having all these hunters around isn't much better.
Yeah, especially in conditions of low visibility, as it's been in certain areas mm-hmm. this past weekend. But, yeah, I mean, I think we're noticing it more, and part of that is growth. So I just feel like that should be part of it, or at least taken into account. And yeah, I hope the strategies are good and meet some kind of baseline so that there is something, you know, that is suitable, and it's not just sort of window dressing and you know, kind of a theater of managing something that in some places is a problem, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's as big of a problem. People should drive slower and
yes.
on and on. Just anyway, what else?
Be careful out there. There are a lot of creatures, human and otherwise, that don't have reflectors and maybe aren't doing the right thing, but you're the one in the car and you can cause the most damage, and that's not a good thing.
Another aspect is just comprehensive urban planning and the kind of strategy where things aren't so haphazard,
mm-hmm.
because if you have ways that, you know, wildlife aren't cut off from the patterns of where they're moving from and to, and all of those things can be taken into account. Like, we have a lot more tools and information about how to do things right.
So this new change to state election law, voters will be able to mail ballots during the early voting period without the excuse of illness or being out of town. That's required by traditional absentee ballots. It's called no excuse voting, which I like the sound of. That began as a temporary measure during the COVID-19 pandemic to limit spread of the virus at crowded polls. Of course, the Republicans are against this, against anything that makes it easier for people to vote. Senate Republican leader Rob Ort of Lockport, wherever that is, called the new law an unconstitutional scheme by Democrats who repeatedly attempt to rig the system in their favor. Well, look, Rob, let me just explain something to you. That's what voting is. That's what campaigning is. You always want the system to work in your favor. And that's what you guys do all the time, is try to rig the system in your favor. It's called politics, all right? But I don't see how you can argue against making it easier for people to vote. And of course, we're talking about people who are eligible to vote. Nobody is saying, let's let everybody vote regardless of their status. No, obviously this is done in a very secure manner. I mean, Kyle, you're from Washington. You vote by mail all the time. In fact, everybody in Washington votes by mail. It's great. It works. Tell these people, please.
Well, it has to do mainly with signature verification and the paper ballots. I mean, that are accounted for in a very systematic way, and a lot of the facilities that are responsible for this have standards for how their on-site systems are managed and contained or compartmentalized. And there's obviously surveillance is a big part of counting ballots. It was used in really manipulative ways that Rudy Giuliani is paying dearly for now. But surveillance in the places where access control and verifying who is around, if they're indeed election workers doing their shift, doing the procedures and things that they're expected to do. That's a part of how all of this should be structured, even if you're not using paper ballots or systems that have been shown to work really quite reliably as far as tabulating and pretty quickly with a lot of these elections divisions and in various parts of the country doing their very best. And when they're attacked like this, it's sick, and they should have some kind of outcome through the judicial system as a consequence of accusations against work they're doing if they're shown to have been made incorrectly, like allegations that are just total slander and right. stuff like that. So I mean, it could be lucrative for election workers. So we need those people. We need those systems. We need it to be whatever works, whatever states decide. It needs to be something that has been tested. And I don't know, for an absentee system, I think that's a part of it. We were confronted, actually, I think, talking to some people about this, and I forgot to mention the other aspects of it. We were just talking about basically a system that has a receipt or a way to verify. The person we were talking to was talking about electronic machines, which I agree. And I was saying that physical access and a lot of the ability to manipulate it has to do with who's really in front of it, because it's more or less contained. But that's my limit, based on my limited knowledge. I didn't mention that there are alternative systems that use paper ballots and automated tabulation, as well as things like signature verification and other details to verify the voter is indeed who they say they are.
Right, right. Well, you know, here in New York, we seem to have the fill in the bubble and fax machine type voting system that I'm not a big fan of, but it does work and it is able to be verified and checked and all that. I don't see the harm in having the early write-in or mail-in voting for people who can't make it. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me why people would be opposed to that unless they simply don't want more people to vote. And that kind of makes sense.
Now, it's wildly disingenuous to make it out to be like a free-for-all, because it's not.
Speaking of elections, something else that is going to be affecting elections in New York is a bill that, or law, actually, that Governor Hochul signed on Friday that could radically transform local elections here in New York, switching them to even-numbered years to coincide with gubernatorial and presidential elections. Yeah. So basically, advocates for that law argue that New York traditionally has higher voter turnout in even-numbered years than in odd years when town and county offices are on the ballot, like the year we just had now. The key political point is Democrats historically have a much better turnout during gubernatorial and particularly presidential years. Now, what do you think Republicans feel about this? Republicans criticize the new law as an attempt to nationalize local elections and boost Democrats' chances in contests for county executive, town supervisor, and other local officials. Senate Minority Leader Rob Ort, again, the same guy, Rob Ort. Why is he the one criticizing all these laws? It's a totally different story. And now he's from North Tonawanda, so he changed where he's from. The touted benefits of this bill are a total sham concocted to hide the Democrats' goal of expanding one-party control to every level of government. Okay, Rob, again, first of all, have you seen the election results here on Long Island? Because, boy, this place went red pretty good. In fact, many parts of New York State are red. So to say it's one-party rule, that's a bit of a misrepresentation at best. To say that this is an attempt by Democrats to gain a political advantage, again, yeah, this is politics. This is what they do. You'd be doing the same thing if the role was reversed. So let's not be all shocked at this. But, you know, it's hard to argue against something that results in more people voting. And that's what you guys are always doing, is arguing against more people voting. It's a bad look. It's a bad look. I advise against it. You know, maybe have better policies, better candidates. You might do better in those even years. I'm looking forward to this beginning in 2026.
Yeah, all eligible voters should be given the opportunity. And it's a bad, bad look when you are shaping it by redistricting or other kinds of policies that disenfranchise people.
Yeah, to celebrate, I might leave town before November of 2026 and vote no excuse mail-in, and see how that works for a local office in an even year.
I
have to write this down to remember this. Okay, so let's see. What is going on in the rest of the world? Oh, boy. So death toll in Gaza is now over 20,000. Yeah, I remember when it reached over 10,000. Doesn't it seem like the world is less outraged now that it reached 20,000 than when it reached 10,000 or when it reached 2,000? That's what I'm afraid of, is that we're becoming desensitized to this and we're not paying enough attention, and the rest of the world is just kind of, you know, giving up and accepting this as normal. It's a really bad chain of events that has been taking place over the past couple of months, and it only has been a couple of months. This kind of death toll is, well, I can't say unprecedented, but it's something that is not normal and is not something that happens that frequently. I mean, we're talking about this kind of civilian death toll in Vietnam is something that Americans might remember. But it's just shameful, and our not talking about it is helping to enable that, or simply vilifying anybody who dares to criticize this horrific response. You know, we always talk about what happened on October 7th as a brutal attack, and it was a very brutal attack. We don't say the same thing when it comes to killing 20,000 innocent women, children, civilians. We don't call that brutal. We call that a response. And that's not right. That is absolutely not right. And the more that we use comfortable language in describing that, the more it gives a green light to continuing and just making it normal. It's not normal. It's not normal. It's not something that we should just accept. Do I have answers? No, of course not. I don't know anybody who has answers that are going to work. But it seems like a good first step is to stop. It's for everyone to stop and step back. And Netanyahu has made it clear he has no intention of doing that. He wants to continue. In fact, he says he's going to accelerate, make it even worse somehow. How is that even possible? And then afterwards, he had 3 points. I don't have them off the top of my head, but one is to destroy Hamas. You know, I have no problem with that. Hamas should go. But, you know, Netanyahu helped set up Hamas. You know, he helped give them the control that they had, that they abused horribly, and that they use against the Palestinian people constantly.
He didn't set them up, like, per se, as an organization.
He might as well have.
But he definitely bolstered them because of it was advantageous.
He gave them more power than they would have gotten on their own, that's for sure.
Right.
And helped create an impossible situation. He and Trump did this.
Well, and the impossible situation we find ourselves facing right now.
Right. And he wants to demilitarize Gaza, which, you know, that kind of is addressed by the point I was making a couple of weeks ago. Do Palestinian people have the right to defend themselves? Apparently, the answer is no. They will not have the right to defend themselves, period. So demilitarize them. Okay. And also de-radicalize all Palestinians. Now, that's kind of the most Orwellian one of all. How exactly do you, quote unquote, de-radicalize an entire population of people when you're bombing them into submission and murdering them? You know, tens of thousands, literally. And you wish for them not to be radicalized. What does that mean? Does that mean they're supposed to welcome you as friends after all this? That they're not supposed to criticize in any way? That they're supposed to turn off the bad TV channels and only watch the good ones? I mean, this is unrealistic, and we cannot allow someone like Netanyahu to set all the terms here. You know, when this is over, whenever that happens, the bombing, I mean, there has to be a solution that either pisses everybody off or makes everybody feel like they got something, but it can't just be whatever Netanyahu wants, because believe me, it'll come out, I'm sure. A good part of why all this is happening is to take the attention away from all the criminal charges Netanyahu is facing, to keep him in power for as long as possible, and to dehumanize the enemy. And it's like we've learned nothing. I'd like to play something, and this is going to surprise you, Kyle, because it's a piece that I put together for this radio station, this very radio station, back in July of 1981.
Wow.
Yeah, I was a kid then. I was pretty new at the station. And
who let you in?
I don't know. Well, no, actually, you know, that was the first year of The Voice of Long Island, the show that I did with my good friend Mike Juhas. I just put together this piece, which was based on news events of the time. And I'm going to play this particular fake news piece. And tell me if anything seems familiar. Remember, July 1981.
This is a special report from the newsroom of Radio Free Long Island. Less than an hour ago, Israeli warplanes, in a surprise move, attacked the campus of the State University at Stony Brook. We understand there was significant damage sustained by the university, including the loss of its hot water generator. The athletic fields were also heavily mined, and several academic buildings were destroyed, along with one dormitory. There is no word yet on casualties. There is also little, if any, understanding as to just why this raid took place. An official of the Israeli parliament, whom we contacted late this evening, said that Menachem Begin has had his eye on Stony Brook for a while. According to him, there are a number of Arab students who reside here, as well as a number of people who criticize Israel's regime on a regular basis. This, in Begin's words, is sufficient evidence to classify Stony Brook as a major potential enemy. He calls today's raid on the campus a defensive move which was totally justifiable. However, there are some who disagree.
No, I don't go along with it at all. I mean, I could see bombing an Iraqi reactor or maybe the Palestinians or something, but this is a campus on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. It's in the United States. And I don't think you can get away with that. It's stupid. Why are you bombing her? Are they going to bomb individual houses next? Come on, this thing's getting kind of ridiculous, don't you think?
Stony Brook's president, John Marburger, was away on vacation when the attack occurred and so could not be reached for comment. A spokesman for the president said,
I don't want to talk about it.
Campus activist Mitchell Cohen commented from the headquarters of his leftist organization, the Red Balloon, saying that he was torn between calling Israel an aggressive, imperialistic, fascist nation of upstarts or calling the United States an anti-Semitic, overgrown nation of bourgeois opportunists. He hopes to make up his mind by tomorrow so that the left can move ahead with renewed strength. It's not clear whether or not this latest attack by Israel will have an effect on those fighter planes that are still waiting to be shipped to Israel. An unidentified spokesman for the State Department was heard to say late tonight that bombing an American university might not have been a very smart thing for Menachem Begin to do. In Tirana, there has been no comment whatsoever from the Albanian government at last report.
Oh, boy. Well, if you knew me back then, I always had to work Albania into everything.
Wait, there was no follow-up from Albania?
No, Albania had nothing to do with any of this.
Also, they never commented.
But look, this has been going on for a while. 1981, I did that piece. because Israel has developed this reputation of just complete overreaction and just no rules apply. So at the time, you know, they were. I think they had just bombed an Iraqi nuclear plant or something. So people were saying, yeah, well, they could just come to Stony Brook and bomb them as well. And you see also the same reaction. If you dare to criticize anything that their government does, then you become labeled as anti-Semitic or, somebody who, clearly is on the side of Hamas. And it's ridiculous. You know, if that applies to anyone, well then identify those people and stay away from them. But the vast majority of people simply don't want to see massacres. And that's pretty much always been the way it is. And a good number of people in Israel feel the same way. So, yeah, that's something to think about. I realized, we did that piece so many years ago, and not much has changed.
Yeah, wow. That is incredible. That's so long ago. And it is the sort of traits of, like, defensive self-esteem. Mm-hmm. So, sadly.
Yeah. Anyway, if you have comments, write to us, otw@2600.com, and we'll be sure to read those remarks, maybe even on the air. Who knows? What else? Big shout out to the Long Island Railroad, of all people, because we went to the city, and boy, their system has improved. At least for us, it did. We had a couple of instances where we had to take the train, in connection with the phone app that they use now, what is it called? Train Time, I think. Where
it's
you
pretty good.
Yeah, you know when a train is showing up, you know what cars are crowded, you know where to transfer and all that kind of thing, and you can buy tickets with it as well, and just do the whole thing on your phone in 5 seconds, and simply show the QR code to the conductor, and everything is fine. But also, you know, again, mileage varies. I know that. But we took a rush hour train. I think it was, should I give it away? The 458 out of Penn Station. And this train is a double-decker train. You know, most double-deckers are completely diesel, and they don't go into Penn Station. But this one does. I think there are two trains a day that do this.
It's unusual.
because that means you don't have to switch in either Jamaica or Huntington to get to Stony Brook. And so you have what's known as a one-seat ride all the way from Penn Station to Stony Brook. It took an hour and a half. That's the quickest I've ever gone by train. And it was on time. It was incredible. And this is how the system can work. If it's given support, if improvements are made, can you imagine if they electrify out to Port Jefferson, which, you know, that line has not been electrified east of Huntington. It's well overdue. And, you know, just the connection to the university alone is a reason to do this. But, you know, having trains go faster, and these trains aren't even going that fast. We're talking like 85 miles an hour is, I think, the top speed.
Yeah, we were using GPS and maps stuff to clock exactly like when it felt like it was very fast, mm-hmm. like, you know, what the top speeds were like. And it's impressive, and you realize this could be in all parts of the system. And like you said, they are not lacking electricity. It's simply the will to build out that way.
Exactly. And you know, don't listen to the naysayers. Look, we're seeing a lot of improvements with the infrastructure bill of Biden's. We're seeing a lot of things get better as far as train travel and mass transit and all of that. It has to be supported. This has to be something that we look at and say, yeah, this is an improvement. This is something I want to support. Now, everybody, no matter where you live, I don't care if you live in Switzerland or Germany or Holland, you think your train system is terrible. You think it's got all these problems. It runs late. But guaranteed, it's better than somewhere else. And at least here, I can point to train systems and say, wow, this has improved a lot over the last few years. And, you know, by realizing the progression and the improvements that have taken place, I think that leads to getting more of them.
Yeah, and just a comment on the technology, specifically like apps, but also ways they're integrating, for having them all synchronized in the way they are and timed really well, like the reliability of the information, but also the pervasiveness of information, I think are profoundly useful, especially when the system is under stress or there are changes or there is stuff that it needs to be pushed to riders. The more systems like those apps and alerts and things like that that mm-hmm. you have that people can refer to that are accurate, updated and accurate, the better people can adapt to changes in the system when there's stress or other kinds of changes that you need to tell people about. So those investments, I think, are, you can count on them keeping the riders there, because even when the bus is late or something is changing, they can at least have enough information and quickly to still ride. I mean, I did miss a couple buses, or I just had to skip out on some buses when we were riding around. And
we got in that bus that was completely packed. But
I had paid for one of the trip tickets, you know, the receipt ones that you have to pull.
Yes.
And then I abandoned that trip.
We're talking about the select buses in Manhattan or New York City. And you use the old MetroCard system, where basically you what you do is you put the MetroCard in a machine at the bus stop, it spits out a ticket, and you just get on the bus. You don't show the driver anything.
But we were in a hurry.
If ticket inspectors come on, you have to show that receipt. Now, with the new OmniCard, you simply go on the bus and tap your OmniCard. Yeah, I'm not sure how they check that. That hasn't happened to me yet, but it's a lot faster to do it that way. But the bus that we were trying to get on was so packed with people, but we had to get on that bus if we were going to make the train I just mentioned at Penn Station. We crammed ourselves onto that, and it was something. It was a challenge. It was also rush hour, so that's the kind of thing that happens.
And that was total opposite as far as the Omni system working, because it was just displaying like do not use, or it was like out of order.
Well, for some reason, the bus was broken too, so I couldn't even scan my Omni card. Whatever, you know, when that happens, you get a free ride. But you know,
making the connection though made up for having paid for a ride I didn't take earlier.
A lot of buses now have screens on them. I think more than half have screens that tell you what stop is coming up next. That's something that was unheard of in New York City only a few years ago.
And we saw similar larger display boards on platforms. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking on the 4 and 5.
Yeah, most train platforms seem to tell you when a new train is coming.
They give you all the stops for that particular train and then like rotate through to the next train mm-hmm. and give you more detailed stuff.
To be honest, you know, I have a lot of critiques too. When you're standing on a platform why do you need to know what the fifth train to that platform is going to be? Are you going to wait for the fifth one? I mean, it's the same one as the second one. So I don't know.
Maybe there's too much information.
Well,
there's
sometimes
abundance.
It's just the wrong information, you know,
yeah.
Or there are, you know, I have notes, and if anyone cares to listen, I think it would be advantageous to make a few changes, but for the most part, it has advanced to the stage where I could say this is kind of like Europe was in the 1990s, you know, when I was complaining a lot about how antiquated, because you used to have to either stand on a line to buy a ticket or go to a machine and stand on another line, and you had to do it there, and if you were late for your train, good luck. Now you can do it, you know, anywhere on your phone, and the system works, and it's going to become more and more integrated. So It's so much more convenient, and I just think it needs some kind of acknowledgement rather than complaints, because people always complain about these things, and I do too, but acknowledgement is also important, and yes, LIRR has come a long way.
Now, some of the prices are still a little high. I mean,
oh yeah, that's true.
You got to weigh that. I mean, these are not trips you can just be taking all the time. Hopefully it grows enough, and I mean, the system is worthy of the improvements. And I know that costs, even if they're getting matching funds somehow.
But wait till congestion pricing starts, which I think is coming up in 2024 as well. That's going to cost you $15 to drive into Manhattan. And that's only slightly discounted if you take the tunnel, which you already pay a toll for. A lot of people will start opting for the train, I think.
It's so true, because finding spots when you have a vehicle, and then just remembering, maintaining, navigating, and the liability and risk of driving around in the city with a lot of people, it takes so much off of your worries and your travel plans when you're not dealing with the vehicle.
I get the complaints that drivers have about having this new congestion fee of $15. But I also don't get it, because why are you doing this? Why are you putting yourself through the stress and misery of driving on a crowded road into a crowded city, trying to find parking, dealing with having your car there, when all you have to do is park your car at a train station, take a train in, and then you're in the city and get anywhere really, really quickly. Also, I don't understand the pushback, for people that are coming from various places. For instance, New Jersey is suing New York over this. I don't understand why New Jersey has it worse than, say, Long Island. What's the difference? They're acting like there's a special type of inconvenience to them. But it's the same $15 for either one. Yes, they have to pay a toll to get to New York in the first place, but they always had to pay a toll. So that's no different.
And that's a Jersey thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And don't forget the maintenance and fuel and other costs. Tickets if you park in the wrong place.
It's just not worth it. And you know, if you do have to drive in, $15 really isn't that much for that kind of convenience. And you'll have less traffic to deal with, because less people will be doing that.
Yeah. And I mean, 90 minutes, you could be, I mean, middle of the night with nobody on the road, hightailing as fast as you can, and still not really beat that, and have the vehicle to worry about.
Oh, I can beat that in the middle of the night.
All right.
Just over an hour, I can make it.
Yeah, speed race.
Well, I mean, if you're going to challenge me like that, sure, absolutely. I can get into the city quickly.
Save it for after the show.
But it's not worth it. It's not worth it if you don't have a compelling reason to have a vehicle. And so many people just drive by themselves, you know? And just think about what that does to the environment. And just to the, not just the global environment, the local environment, where people are trying to walk or ride their bikes. Look, I didn't believe this a few years ago. I didn't think it was possible. And people have proved me wrong. New York City is a city full of bikes now. It's a city that is more pedestrian friendly, but we're not finished. We have to keep working on that, and we have to keep making it safer and, able to breathe the air. That'd be nice. So it can be done. It can be done. And I think New York will serve as a model to the rest of the country. So.
Yeah, as long as people care about it, and I think the motivation is there. People really want cities that they're proud of.
Right. Yeah, extra $15 if you drive into the city, okay. You know, if you're a merchant, charge extra $15 over the course of the day, I'm sure it'll be fine. If your boss for some reason wants you to come to the office and drive your car in, I don't know why they'd want that, but make sure you get a raise that covers $15 a day. I don't know. There are ways of dealing with this situation, but not doing it, that's not a way to deal with anything. Okay. Ready to get angry?
Oh, we're not angry.
No, this isn't anger. No, not yet.
All right. Yeah, just go for it.
Well, I mean, I'm angry about 20,000 people dying in Gaza. Yeah, I'm pretty upset by that. But
I think we're all...
That was 10 minutes ago. I'm talking about right now. Let's get angry again.
Okay.
let's go to Mississippi. Are you angry yet? You should be.
No,
just being in Mississippi.
Fond memories. This is a
well,
nice place.
Yeah, that's because we weren't victims of this nonsense.
We had a good time, yeah.
The mother of a 10-year-old child who was sentenced, a 10-year-old child sentenced by a Mississippi judge to 3 months of probation and a book report for the crime of urinating in public. His mother, or her mother, actually I'm not sure, refused to sign his probation agreement and has asked for the charge against her son to be dismissed. The child's mother had initially planned on signing the agreement to avoid the risk of prosecutors upgrading her son's charge, as they threatened, but she changed her mind after reading the full agreement. Her attorney says, we cannot in good conscience accept a probation agreement that treats a 10-year-old child as a criminal. The terms proposed are not in the best interest of our client, and we will take all necessary steps to challenge them. The terms for the 10-year-old's probation were similar to those prosecutors would demand of an adult, including sections that prohibited the use of weapons and demanded he submit to drug tests at a probation officer's discretion. 10 years old! 10 years old, urinating in public. This is how they treat people there. The agreement also imposed an 8 p.m. curfew for the child. The terms of the agreement stem from a sentence ordered on December 12th by Tate County Youth Court Judge Rusty Harlow. The judge said the child, who is black, don't tell me you're surprised by that. And I don't know what color Judge Rusty Harlow is, but I can guess. the child must serve 3 months of probation and write a 2-page book report on the late NBA star Kobe Bryant. Why? Why Kobe Bryant? Did he urinate in public once? And maybe it's just, you know, here, write a book report on one of the good ones. Then maybe that's it. If I can read into the judge's actions here. That's the sick message he's sending. The child's mother has said her son urinated behind her vehicle while she was visiting a lawyer's office in Senatobia, Mississippi, on August 10th. Police officers in the town of about 8,100 residents, which is 40 miles south of Memphis, Tennessee, saw the child urinating and arrested him. Okay, you know, what kind of sick people do that? You see a 10-year-old kid urinating and you arrest him? That's your reaction? I think they saw a 10-year-old black kid and they panicked. I think that's what happened. This is Mississippi. Officers put him in a squad car and took him to the police station. The prosecution threatened to upgrade the charge of a child in need of supervision to a more serious charge of disorderly conduct if the boy's family took the case to trial.
That sounds intimidating.
You know what? I think everybody should go down to this this place, Senatobia, Mississippi, and urinate on the courthouse. That's what I think. I'm not saying to do it. I'm saying that's what I think. Or you could mail them jars of urine, I suppose. That works too. Point is, this is not the way to treat people. This is disgusting. And I don't care how much people are urinating in the streets there, it doesn't in any way compare to what you are doing to a 10-year-old kid. And how many other cases like this are out there that we don't hear about? It just goes to show how justice is so unevenly applied. I mean, think of what you got away with when you were 10. You know, most of us growing up in, you know, places where we don't have to worry about this kind of thing.
Oh, I do all the time.
What, you still do things?
No. I mean, I think about what I got away with all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, wow. I've had cops. No kidding. I've had cops. I'm not going to use the language they use, but tell me that if I were black, I would no longer be living based on something they were confronting me about and which I completely got away with.
Yeah, people really show themselves truly when under duress, when they're challenged like that, when they're caught off guard by the way people standing up to authority. And I could totally see that kind of stuff, as though, you know, they don't even realize the horrendousness of what they're saying when it's being said, but it's just that sense of power, just mm-hmm. they can't not boast about it, and that is pretty awful. And I just think, like, the problem of public bathrooms in general, I think that was covered on some of the late night shows last year, and I don't know if you've been in New York, you've seen stuff like that, but people should have dignity in public spaces. And I don't know, people go between cars all the time, of all kinds, you know, people leaving bars or people leaving, that happens in an urban environment. And mm-hmm. like you're saying, this is the kind of thing when you dismiss the kind of discrimination that people talk about when it's pointed out or there's alarm over it. This is the kind of blind spot, like other parts of the world, things that other parts of the country and other people that do not share your experience and are not in the safer spaces and where you can act that way without scrutiny and unfair judgment. And I don't know, it just seems like a kid had to go, and it just seemed, and
doesn't matter
to be treated that way. It doesn't
matter if the kid had to go or if he's just doing it recreationally. I don't care. That's not how you treat a kid for doing something like
no,
that.
No. And probably just, it just isn't, it's inconsiderate of the context and a power trip.
And how do you think he's going to grow up feeling, you know, about law totally enforcement, about society in general? Totally traumatized. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, fortunately, these things are relegated to states like Mississippi. We would never have to worry about it in, say, state like, what, California? Oh, but you're wrong, Kyle. You're wrong for thinking that, because the Southern California city of Huntington Beach, a bastion of conservative voters, has made the move to block diverse month-long celebrations of Black history, women's history, and pride in favor of observing the Revolutionary and Civil Wars, California's history, and America's independence. Yeah, an agenda item introduced on December 19th forbids any programming that pertains to previously established honorary celebrations for women, people of color, and LGBTQ+ groups from taking place on city-owned property, including libraries, or of being featured in city communications such as social media posts. That's according to Natalie Moser, a city council member who voted against the action. This means that monthly programming meant to acknowledge and teach the history of historically marginalized groups, such as Black Americans and LGBTQ+ people, will be replaced by content about local railroad and surfing history, and a month-long tribute to the discovery of oil in Huntington Beach called Black Gold Jubilee, according to the agenda item's language. It's still possible that the city can establish a day of observation for marginalized groups, but that's it, a day. That's all you get. Oh my God, this is Huntington Beach, California. You know, I don't know if this is actually going to happen or if this is just being proposed. They say that those in the far right fringe do not represent the majority of Huntington Beach residents. But the fact that this is even making the news is so, so sad.
Isn't that McCarthy's this area? Like,
I don't have it memorized, but it could be.
Probably is, but wow. Nice one, Callie. Right on. Yeah, the blandness, this whole trend sort of is disturbing, and I'm wholly unimpressed. The sort of disappearing of groups and under the auspices of this sort of faux patriotism, it's galling, hard to take, but you know, they'll try. And it's hilarious on a certain level. And you have to just keep a sense of humor without getting too upset.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. You have to keep a sense of humor. You can't be bitter about this.
It's easy.
Just know, and I say this to everybody, know that we will win in the end. You know, freedom, justice, equality, we'll get there.
It has been an incredibly depressing time
for
a
lot
of those groups.
It has been, but we have advanced ourselves individually, I think, and we will win, but we have to stay together. We can't fight each other, and we have to believe.
Fully. And sharing both alarm and alerting people, but and disseminating stories that are examples of how these things can go wrong. And also just talking about your experience and talking to people and hearing them. Your listening can really have an impact on somebody that's having a bad time and not being heard. So just be that for someone if you can.
We've run out of time yet again. I don't know how it keeps happening, but we just plow through an hour like nobody's business. Please, if there's anything that we said that annoys or delights you, we want to hear about it. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. That's an email address for people who don't still use email. We'll be back again next week, next Tuesday, from 6 to 7. And please keep listening to WUSB.
Let the hilarity ensue.
Good night.
Good morning, Sodom and Gomorrah. Good morning, sinners. No, that wasn't your radio sets on the blinking. and Gomorrah. This is London, Gov.